Hello, and welcome to this episode of Ask a Physical Therapist. I'm your host, Dr. Tanis Kitchener, physical therapist, and today I'm greeting Dr. Paula Markianda. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Paula is an MD and has a clinic in Grand Junction, Colorado called Markianda's Imaginative Medicine Institute, right?
Yeah.
Yay.
We call it Mimi for short because nobody wants to say that mouthful.
Okay, so Mimi's clinic in Grand Junction.
Clinic.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely.
We would love to chat about foundational health and maybe tie it into some aging.
Totally.
I know that's your gig, so let's drop some knowledge on foundational health. Will you first share what's your definition of foundational health?
So people tell me I'm complex in my simplicity, so I try to keep it simple. I feel like our foundation is our individual cells and their pathways. So to me, foundational health means keeping those cells and pathways as healthy as possible.
And for the listener, she's wearing a shirt that says, love your cells, love yourself.
Yeah, it's kind of our clinic tagline.
So when you get a new patient, do you do a bunch of lab work to look at their pathways, or is there other testing that you prefer to see where we're at with our pathways?
Right. So we have a fair number of questionnaires depending on what's going on, because I learn a lot from actually asking questions and listening to people. I know sometimes that doesn't happen in a doctor's office, but I try to listen to people because it tells me a lot. And then I do like labs. We have a phrase, test, don't guess. Mm. So my foundational lab work, if you will, is it's like 8 to 9 tubes of blood, and we take some urine too because we're greedy. And it tests a range of things. So things that you often get tested maybe at a standard Western medical office, like the CBC or the blood count, CMP, chemistries. But I throw other things in that measure thyroid function. And when I measure thyroid function, there's about 8 to 9 parameters I look at, not just a TSH. I look at inflammatory markers. I look at iron binding capacity, additional liver enzymes that don't always show up in a chemistry. I look at the pathways for glucose metabolism. So we know diabetes is a problem in this country, but what's a bigger problem is insulin resistance. And insulin resistance is hardly ever looked at on standard labs. So we check labs that look at that, and we always check a vitamin D. In Colorado, we definitely live above the 35th parallel. Even though most of us are at elevation, we're not running outside naked 20 minutes a day. And even if we do, because we're above the 35th parallel, we're never going to absorb enough vitamin D. Especially if we use sunscreen. And come on, we might all want to be running around naked for 20 minutes, but who's really doing that?
What levels do you like to see people's vitamin D at?
So D, I like 80 to 90. Unless you either are a cancer survivor at high risk of cancer, then I like it closer to 100.
Okay.
People are like, oh gosh, that's so high. Can't you overdose on vitamin D? They probably don't actually sound like that. Sorry. but vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin, but you really need a level more than 150 to have, like, toxicity from vitamin D. And it's pretty difficult to get that high.
What tests do you usually use for insulin resistance?
So I look at basically 3 main things on glucose or sugar metabolism in general and a couple extra things. So obviously fasting glucose, fasting insulin, hemoglobin A1C, and then I usually look at 2 other liver enzymes, which frankly are usually fine, but if there's a major problem in sugar metabolism, they can be off. Mm. And they can also be indicative of other things, those extra liver enzymes. But so fasting insulin, which is, I just don't see it tested very often. And you can do a little calculation between the glucose and the fasting insulin to kind of calculate if there's insulin resistance, but it's pretty easy. If your fasting insulin is elevated, your insulin is not functioning properly. Mm. Your cells are not using insulin properly. you don't really need to do a calculation. But there is one to kind of verify what you can see.
So fasting glucose is only part of the picture. You also went fasting insulin.
Yeah, fasting glucose is only part of the picture. Hemoglobin A1C, which kind of gives us a number, kind of a percentage, really, of what your sugars have been like over the past 3 months. So it's a more long-term kind of factor. It's also only part of the picture. I mean, it's an important part of the picture. And I like to see hemoglobin A1Cs 5.5 or less. And they'll hit 5.6 up to 6. And sometimes it's not noticed. It doesn't flag on standard labs all the time. Usually over 6 will flag.
Okay. So we've got sugar or glucose metabolism. What are some of the other main pathways you look at?
Inflammation. So inflammation's huge. So when I look at iron, I look at iron binding capacity and ferritin. Ferritin can be elevated with inflammation as well as other issues, but very high ferritin is often a factor in inflammation. Homocysteine is an inflammatory marker. CRP is an inflammatory marker. Those are like the biggies that we look at. And then some of the way the labs as a whole look can tell us kind of things that aren't quite functioning properly and probably are indicating inflammation. So it's pretty readily apparent, actually. I mean, standard liver enzymes, AST and ALT, it's an indicator of inflammation because angry or damaged liver cells release those. So it's another indicator. I mean, really. So a lot of things can indicate inflammation. Uric acid can indicate inflammation, but our true inflammatory markers, I would call that more the homocysteine, the CRP, and the ferritin.
Do those labs give you more information on how to address the inflammation, or is it really just confirmation, yep, there's an inflammatory process going on, and then you have to find other information to decide how to go about treating it?
So usually there's indicators within the panel. It's a very comprehensive panel, so it'll kind of tell us other things. Oh, and I should mention, like lipids, like your cholesterol and things like that, those increase with inflammation too. But you have to have enough cholesterol in order to make your sex hormones, because those are cholesterol based. So our fervor to drive down our cholesterol is great to a point, because otherwise we can't make those all important hormones. So it can be a dizzying array of information when I'm going over someone's labs. I try to simplify it. And every time I do a lab panel on someone, they get what's called a functional report, which is different than any other lab report you've gotten from your standard providers. And you can refer to it. It's like the Bible of you, according to your blood and urine. So you can always refer to it. Because what I say is in the paperwork, but sometimes it's nicer to have somebody to actually throw questions at.
Right.
And then we develop a plan from that. Like, what do we do about them?
Right. Right.
So is it supplements? Is it nutrition? Is it exercise? I mean, it's usually all of the above. And if there's some other underlying issues going on, then how they interplay with what's going on.
All right, so we've got glucose, inflammation. What other pathways would you like to discuss?
Like my hallmarks of aging, and I don't always include glucose on that, and I really should. There should be 4 hallmarks of aging, right? Sugar metabolism, mitochondrial dysfunction, oxygen utilization, and inflammation. Those would be like the top 4 for me, for what I see generally. So we kind of talked about glucose a little bit. So as we age, not surprisingly, some of our functions aren't as speedy. They don't keep up as well. So as we age, we make fewer antioxidant enzymes. So antioxidant enzymes are anti-inflammatory enzymes, which means we can't combat the inflammation we are creating as effectively. And you can eat a million blueberries, but they're not as effective as your enzymes that are innate to your body. So how do we make more of those? There's some supplements that actually help us make more antioxidant enzymes. And there's some herbals we've all heard of. Like the supplement I use, it has – oh, this is a test to see if I remember what's in it. There's only five things. It's turmeric, green tea, milk thistle, ashwagandha, and bacopa. So it's Eastern and Western herbs combined. It's a really beautiful herbal formula. And this formula is unique among supplements to a degree. It's been studied pretty extensively. Mm. And this particular formula helps our body improve the production of our antioxidant enzymes, which is crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I use a lot of that. I take it every day. So for inflammation, that's a great thing to do. There's other things that are good for inflammation. Yes, eating blueberries is great. Fish oils are great. High-dose omega-3s, and I prefer high-dose DHA. When I say high-dose, I mean 3 to 4 grams a day. Mm. Like, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. But there's really good evidence on 3 to 4 grams of clean omega-3s a day. And I prefer DHA because our brain and our nerves uses DHA preferentially, and it will our body will convert it to DPA or EPA. Mm. But converting from those back to DHA is a little harder for our body to do. So I'm very pro DHA.
Okay. I was going to ask you that. What about supplementing with a product that says it's actual enzymes like Wellzyme or I don't know. I see products out there that say that they're enzymes.
So a lot of those enzyme products are digestive enzymes, which isn't a bad idea either. We kind of slack off on our digestive enzymes as we age. And, oh, so there's this thing, right? The gallbladder. Mm. I think we all know somebody who's had their gallbladder taken out. When the gallbladder is taken out, you should be put on digestive enzymes. Because what does the gallbladder do?
Right.
It holds on to our digestive enzymes and squirts them out as we need them to digest. Well, it's not there anymore. So usually people need some digestive enzymes once you take their gallbladder out. It's like when you're discharged from surgery, you should be handed a bottle of enzymes. I don't see that happening very often, but digestive enzymes. And so for the gallbladder, you want one with ox bile in it.
Okay.
Because bile is what
the gallbladder,
that little sac, holds on to. Yeah, so sometimes that can be a game changer for people after they've had their gallbladders out.
That's a good pearl.
But enzymes, those are usually when people say they're taking enzymes, they're digestive enzymes, pancreatic enzymes, things like that. Antioxidant enzymes, we can't really, I mean, you can take glutathione. It's not as effective as your body making glutathione.
Mm. So is it better for folks to take, is it N-acetylcysteine that's a precursor for glutathione?
I think the formula of the five herbs is better.
Okay.
Because it's got really good evidence. The things with NAC, taking glutathione itself, they degrade. And the actual boost in, you don't get the boost in your own enzyme production as much as you do when you take a formula that has actually been proven to boost.
Now, I know that you do some of the genetic or nutrigenomic testing in your practice.
Yeah.
Do you see anybody with impaired pathways that you don't think they can produce glutathione effectively on their own, and so those folks might actually want to supplement directly with glutathione?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I don't see a ton of that, but okay. A little bit. I probably see more people on that sort of testing who have methylation error. Mm-hmm. Like they can't methylate B vitamins. That can be a big deal, and 20% of the population can't methylate B vitamins.
And if you are in that 20% of population and you don't address it, what types of increased risks do you have?
Well, you're not really getting your Bs. So a thing we think about with B vitamins, well, there's two things I think that are big with Bs. Anemia.
Okay.
Because B12, lack of B12 causes pernicious anemia, but also neurocognitive, so nerve and brain things with B. low B vitamins can seriously affect cognitive function. So those are two I think about. And, you know, in my practice, I don't use non-methylated B vitamins. If I recommend a supplement, it's methylated. If we're doing an IV like a Myers or something like that, I use methylated Bs in my formulas. It doesn't make sense to me not to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only 20% of the population, but it's a better formula for everybody.
Right. There's no harm in taking it methylated.
Absolutely no harm. It absorbs better. Why not go for that?
Right. One of your hallmarks of aging was mitochondrial health.
Yeah.
Let's talk first. What is mitochondria?
So mitochondria, we all learned this in high school. The energy factory of the cell.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is your mitochondria. They're really cool little organelles, and they literally make our energy. They produce ATP. They have a couple pathways to do it. And like any other part of us, they kind of get tired as we get old too, and they don't repair as well. They don't regenerate as well. Mitochondrial biosynthesis or mitochondrial birth generation slows down. So you can do various things to improve the health of your mitochondria. And there's more and more research in mitochondrial health and how to kind of abort mitochondrial dysfunction. There's multiple products out that work different ways to do it. There's another supplement made by the same people who make the one I like for antioxidant enzymes. They make one that's more plant-based. There is a couple others that recently came out, like in the past couple years, that kind of work in a different way. But what's interesting is a lot of these supplements that are new to the market are backed by a lot of research. So you can go at it a couple of different ways. You don't have to be tied to just one way.
Right.
And if you're vegan, you can find a vegan way. If you're paleo, you can find a paleo way. It's nice that way.
There's a have you read the book Brain Energy?
Ooh, no.
It's fantastic. It's written by, I believe he's a psychologist, but it's a theory, right? And the theory is that all mental health disorders, ranging from, you know, what some would consider like a run-of-the-mill anxiety, occasional depression, to psychosis, including, you know, within there, bipolar, dementia, stem from metabolic disorder. And that stems from mitochondrial disorder. So he gets deep into the science of mitochondria, and there's some things in there that I either didn't learn or forgot about how many mitochondria there can be in a particular cell.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, hundreds to thousands.
Yeah.
If I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
I remember drawing the cell, and, you know, I draw two, maybe three. No. This and about how in the brain or in your nervous system, there are mitochondria that are responsible for starting at one synapse, the nerve synapse. Apparently the nerve synapse can only happen effectively if the mitochondria create the ATP or that energy coin, that currency, right there locally at that neuron. They do that and then they move to the next neuron site in that same cell and they do the same thing. And so if you decrease your number of mitochondria that are available or the health and they're not mobile to go from one to another, then you affect your neuronal signaling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was. I recommend the book. It does get a little heavy in some things, but it's. And at the end of the day, there's no solid take home in it. You know, it's do better, have a better diet, have better exercise,
right.
Have better, you know, sleep habits, which is probably actually best. You know, it's not a book trying to sell you that this golden cure. It's, hey, it's all related. And one person's treatment for a mitochondrial or metabolic dysfunction is not going to be the same as somebody else.
Right.
But they might all end up in some shape or form contributing to mental health issues.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, yeah. Your cellular foundation is super important, and then the magic happens in the spaces. So the spaces between synapses, spaces between cells, where that cell to cell neuron-to-neuron communication happens. That's the magic. And most of it is electrical or ionic signaling, I mean, we're just really bags of water and energy,
mm.
which makes sense. Like, there's so many things out there that work on an energetic level, light therapies, sound therapies, magnetic therapies that actually work because we're bags of water and energy. It's really kind of cool. It's really kind of, you know, this weird, we're getting into a weird place now, a weird place of like quantum physics kind of thing. But, you know, when I'm with a patient in my office, bring the evidence in so I don't sound completely psycho, because we can talk about really interesting things that are out there and that we've seen happen or that they're studying. And some of them sound crazy, but we're really, yeah, bags of water and energy.
Let's talk about the next hallmark of aging, oxygen.
Oxygen, yeah. So, you know, like Colorado, we live at elevation, at least a lot of us do. So we probably think about oxygen a little more than some people. But as we age, how we use oxygen also declines. This is pretty well studied. And it also affects our mitochondria, because when they create energy with oxygen, you get a lot more energy out, as opposed to anaerobic respiration, what they call when they work without oxygen, you don't get as many ATP out. It's like an 18-fold difference. Then you get 2 and you get 36 with oxygen. Okay, I'm trying to remember my basic biochemistry now.
36 sounds right to me.
Okay, good.
2 also sounds right, but that's less. We don't focus so much on that.
No, we don't. It's a super important pathway.
Yeah.
But so oxygen utilization decreases. So, yeah, oxygen kind of makes our world go round. It's important. Breathing is important. But like looking at a cellular level, it's incredibly important too. When we hurt ourselves, if we get a cut, a scrape, we need oxygen brought to that area to heal. Oxygen for respiration, not just like the act of breathing respiration, but your mitochondrial respiration to make that electron transport chain function appropriately. I'm so sorry I said those words, electron transport chain. But super important. And there's all kinds of therapies that help bring oxygen in. It's, you know, oxygen, like the popular oxygen bars. Hyperbaric oxygen, like true hyperbaric in like a hard chamber that takes you to a good depth. There's more evidence coming out for soft chambers that don't take you as deep.
Mm-hmm.
And deep, we call them dives, even though you're not going underwater because you're going under the same kind of pressure you would be in underwater. There's more evidence coming out for soft chambers because they're, let's face it, soft chambers are much more affordable than hard. There are hard chambers available on the Western Slope.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least 4 in Delta.
Wow.
Outside of hospitals, there's at least 4 in Delta and I believe 2 now in Grand Junction. And I know there's some.
There's one in the valley here.
Yeah.
At least one in Basalt, I think. I could be wrong.
Yeah. They're increasing in availability mm-hmm. for sure. And hyperbaric has all kinds of crazy evidence behind it for all kinds of medical issues. What does it do? It's pushing oxygen into your cells, into your microvascular. The pressure pushes it into places it has a harder time of reaching.
Hmm.
There's some supplements. There's a supplement I use. This is not its real name. We just call it hyperbaric in a bottle because it helps increase your oxygen carrying capacity. It's a peptide-based supplement. Peptides are small chains of amino acids. So a large chain of amino acid is a protein. A small chain is a peptide. Hormones are peptides. Many of our little communication molecules and cytokines and things like that are peptides in our body. This particular peptide helps increase your oxygen carrying capacity. So I used it a lot over the past few years for, you know, COVID-related things because people were having a hard time with their oxygenation.
Mm.
I used hyperbaric then. Obviously, I used regular standard oxygen therapy. So there are ways to increase your oxygen carrying capacity. We also see people as they advance in age, they leave higher elevations. because it's hard for them. I mean, I think living at elevation is fabulous, and there's other benefits to living at elevation, especially like if you're an athlete who's then going to compete at sea level. That's awesome. But yeah, oxygen, I cannot stress the importance of oxygen. We literally die without it.
So we have just like a minute left. Yeah. Real quick, is there something that somebody should do to increase their utilization of oxygen other than hyperbaric chamber and supplements? Anything that you can
do? I mean, training does it.
Yeah.
So you can increase your lung capacity and how much oxygen you can actually take in your body with training.
Okay. And then you give us some great pearls of wisdom and things to think about regarding inflammation, mitochondrial dysfunction, oxygen utilization, glucose metabolism.
Those are like my top four.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah. So if you want more information, our website is Mimi, M-I-M-I, Cares, C-A-R-E-S.com. That takes you to the Marciano Imaginative Medicine Institute homepage. If you scroll down and click on Mimi's clinic, then you'll get to the clinic page. And I will have on the clinic page, if you wish, a free download that you can click on and get some information, pretty much what I said and maybe a little more on the top four, what I think are the four hallmarks of aging. Yeah, it doesn't cost you a cent. Just, you know, if you want. There's absolutely no pressure because this is radio and I don't know who I'm talking to.
We love it. We love giving free information here. That's why we do the public affairs show, so that folks can have more information at their fingertips and they can then choose how it serves them best.
Awesome.
Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. We're swaying side by side. I heard they were divorcing, but I guess they let it slide. And I wished I had some money with which to buy around. I wish to cash my paycheck before I came to town. But I reached into my pocket, found three 20s and a 10. It feels so good, feeling good again.